Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Good Saturday afternoon, Jacksonville. You're listening to News 104.5 WOKV. The Consumer Law Hour is on the air. My name is Scott Young. I'm your host here every Saturday with our sponsors of the program, Chuck and Eddie Farah from the law firm of Farah and Farah. Gentlemen, how are you this afternoon?
Doing good, Scott.
All's well, Scott. Thanks for being here with us today.
Happy to be here with you guys. Busy travel weekend on the way.
A lot going on.
Busiest travel weekend of the year as we go towards the Thanksgiving holiday, leading to a lot of concerns.
Yeah, I want to get into that, but I just want to mention, this is something we've talked about before. I was going to bring this up during the holidays, but there is a Florida statute that makes you criminally responsible, liable, in the event, let's say you have a party at your house and you leave the alcohol out and somebody underage gets a hold of it and something bad happens. The statute talks about taking reasonable precautions to keep the alcohol away from the kids. So I'm thinking, let's say you have, you're at the house and you have a bar, and maybe the bar is accessible to the kids. Maybe it's there in the middle of the room, or maybe you've got your liquor cabinet where people can just grab something and go. That could be a problem. So the question becomes, what is reasonable? What can you do to, do you lock it up? Do you take it away? You probably have to do that because, even though, of course, you can be held civilly responsible and your homeowner's coverage would, defend you in that situation. But the criminal stuff, of course, that exposes you to jail time. So that was just something that I kind of bring up during the holiday seasons because it's a problem. People are having problems. People
have the parties. Season for the house party.
Yeah, you're having a house party. The wrong people get a hold of the liquor, and bad things can happen. And
you can be responsible for the party who stole the liquor if they're injured from their intoxication.
Yeah, even the person that stole. Yeah, the minor.
And the other. Yeah, and the person they may injure. Yeah,
it's not just the people they hurt. They hurt themselves. You're responsible. So, but that's the statute. It's a first degree and a second degree misdemeanor. I forgot what has to happen for it to be a first degree misdemeanor. But nonetheless, it's something you want to be concerned about.
Better thing to remember how to keep it from happening.
Yeah. I would say lock it up. That's the way you know for sure. That way you've taken all if some kid breaks into the cabinet and grabs something, that's one thing, because you've done everything reasonable. But when you have it out in the open and maybe, you're
allowing it to be served.
Yeah, you're watching a football. Well, not even that. You could be liable if you got it out in the open and you're not taking action to stop them from getting to it. I'm watching, you're watching football on Thanksgiving Day. There's game after game. Who wants to stop doing that?
For example,
you got some kid in the other room.
The beer fridge in the over in the garage or something like that also.
Yeah.
It's risk of liability.
And you're not worried about it. You leave, you're at somebody else's house visiting, and you leave all that out there, and it's a free-for-all. You could be held liable, God forbid, if something happens. So that's the law in the state of Florida, the law in most states. So anyway, the other thing I wanted to get into today is something we really have never talked about is how old – what restrictions do you put on elderly people who are driving? Do you have a cutoff age? Do you say after 80, 85, you can't drive? I think in Florida, all they really have is a vision test. And I think as long as you can pass that vision test, you're okay to drive. There's no testing for weaker muscles. There's no testing for reduced flexibility. There's no testing for limited ranges of motion. There's no testing to see if you're on medications.
How often is a performance review, an actual driving test, required for a renewal?
I think different states have different rules. I think in Florida it's just a vision. I don't know. I really don't. Maybe somebody out there does know. But there's no physical driving test either. I think it's just vision. They don't test any flexibility.
They're not playing basketball.
I know, but let me tell you about this case that happened, Chuck, down in South Florida. This is a recent case where a 17-year-old and her best friend were killed in a head-on collision with a 40-foot RV being driven the wrong way down Highway 40. This is in South Florida. The driver of the RV was 99 years old. He had suffered limitations from vision. He had hearing, some hearing issues, but he was fully privileged to drive by the state of Michigan. So, but the interesting about this case is, okay, yes, they sued his insurance company, but who they, what the other person they came after was the drive, the passenger in the RV. And this is an interesting theory of law. We've used it before, but I've, you know, this is the first time I've seen it used in this situation. And they sued the passenger who was in the RV based on a joint enterprise argument, stating that the passenger was sort of his lookout. And that passenger was sort of telling him to watch out for this, watch out for that, or kind of helping him drive, so to speak. So that person was held responsible. And their insurance company was sued also. So, I mean, that's something to keep in mind here in the state of Florida. You could be – so I'm thinking that would apply here, of course. I mean,
that's a stretch.
It worked, and they went to trial, and they won on that event. But that's a joint enterprise. If you're in a joint enterprise with someone, you're held equally responsible. So I think that if you've got a parent or somebody who's elderly and you're in the passenger seat and you're helping that older person drive – like being a lookout, let's say, quote, you're their lookout, then, and God forbid something happens, if we handled that case and we found those facts, we would pursue that joint enterprise argument, and you would be subject to liability, even though you were just the passenger.
Man. So suffice it to say, maybe if you need a lookout while driving, maybe you shouldn't be driving.
Exactly. Because you as the lookout have a responsibility, and if God forbid something happens, a lawyer that does this type of stuff like we do and looks for every leave no stone unturned type situation, we would probably pursue the passenger of that vehicle. So then the question is, do we, I mean, in Florida, and leave it open if probably want to weigh in on this, but you know, you have a cutoff of 16 years old. You already got one age limit. Do you put an age limit on people who are above 75 or 80? I mean, or do you require them to have some sort of physical test or not just a vision test, which I think all Florida requires.
And consider also there are a lot of circumstantial medications that people get onto that may have some impairment effects on their responses. Should they be required to notify the DMV in that case?
Yeah.
And that creates a certain issue of liability as well, because after age 80, it says you only require a vision test for a license renewal, and that renewal period is for 6 years. So the next time the DMV has a question about whether or not you're able to drive, you're at age 86. Yeah. The next time, at age 92.
Wow. Yeah, this guy's, right.
There's a lot of things that can happen to a human body's abilities and capabilities between those points.
Yeah, this guy was 99 when this accident. I mean, he killed two people. You know, head-on collision, going wrong way down a one-way street.
There had to be more to the story for that joint enterprise to stick.
Well, she was his lookout. I mean, like I said, she was involved in helping him drive. He was licensed. He had a license. He had a valid license from Michigan. It wasn't like he was driving on an invalid license. But if you look at the statistics, for people over 70 years old, they have the highest rate of accidents per mile traveled, even more than people from 16 to 25. Everybody looks at people who are, between 16 and 25 causing all the accidents. If you talk to insurance companies, that's where the accidents occur. But if you look at the number of accidents per mile traveled, it's people over 70 causing those accidents. So,
well, speaking of being on the lookout, we're on the lookout for your calls at 855-765-1045. 855-765-1045. Lines are open on the Consumer Law Hour, ready to take your questions with our legal experts, Eddie Farah, Chuck Farah from the law firm of Farah & Farah. Here is your host on the Consumer Law Hour on News 104.5. We'll be back right after this. On the Consumer Law Hour, our lines are open at 855-765-1045. If you've got questions, our legal experts are here to help you. Donna and Panavidra, our first caller of the day, checking in with some concerns regarding elderly drivers. Donna, you're on the Consumer Law Hour.
Hey, Donna.
All right. Hello. My dad, this has been a while now, it's about 20 years ago, developed dementia, and he still wanted to drive. And he was a good physical driver, but he would kind of get confused sometimes where he was going. So instead of us taking the license away and the keys away and everything, we went to the place where you get your license and had them test him. And they will do that if you request. And they'll drive around with a person and determine whether or not they should be driving, if they've got the facilities, you know, the correct eyesight and the mental capacity and the reflexes. So there is that is an option.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
But you took him down there. I mean, he didn't volunteer. That wasn't required. I mean, how did you get? Did you tell him why you were taking him to the DMV?
No.
I mean, I was like, okay. Well, I mean, that's not. I mean, that's.
But then he wouldn't have remembered anyway.
Yeah. It's a different situation. You're talking about a whole different situation. We're talking about the state. We're talking about the state passing laws that keep people, elderly people, from driving. People who should not be driving on the road.
But that is a very good move on your part to be proactive, especially in regards to his own safety.
I didn't know you could do that.
There's an opportunity to have him tested by a professional.
Yeah. I know that, but he didn't even know what he was doing. They just took him down there.
Right, right. There are realistically people at 90 that can probably drive and people at 60 that shouldn't be.
There are people at 25 who have no business getting behind the wheel.
But the point is, that's why. But there are no laws. Like, there's no follow-up testing. I agree with you. But because once you read, I think it's after 70, that's when they start. I think all Florida does is test your vision. You come in, they test your vision.
They test your vision every time. They check everybody's vision every time you get
there's no special. There's no special testing done for people who are older. No. So they don't test your flexibility, what kind of medications you're on. If you have any kind of memory help, mental, I mean, there's nothing. So that's why
the
this accident
problem,
happened.
The problem, though, I see is when does that happen? Because like you said, there could be 25-year-olds that are on medication that shouldn't be driving.
Right.
So it would probably be nice. I don't know how they would do it, but it might be nice to have at least every 10 years or 5 years or something, or when you get a new license, have something that you're tested on.
Or require you to get something on your doctor.
That would be good. Even if they did it with a simulator instead of taking you out in a car, you know, where they could program in some accidents. Potential accidents.
No, if you have a simulator, it would be perfect because that replicates real driving conditions. And you don't have to take them. You can just put them in the machine. And give them a test. No, you're right.
And here's an interesting prospect. Yeah. Also, insurance companies can submit a list to state DMVs for license suspensions for folks who don't have up-to-date insurance. What's to stop an MD then from being able to indicate a medical prescription status or a medical inability?
You'd have to report it to the state. I mean, you have to write something out. So I've met with Jim Smith today.
Yeah. And I don't know if that would violate HIPAA. That may be
Okay, good point. Good consideration. Thank you very much.
It'd have to be some state laws exception to HIPAA. Because there are exceptions to HIPAA. Yeah. For instance,
doctors may not want that liability because think about this. If you say somebody shouldn't drive, and then they're going to sue you because they think, and even if they shouldn't drive, then you got to deal with that.
Or if they, or they shouldn't be driving and you didn't report it, they're going to say you're liable for not reporting it. So the doctor would get sued in that situation.
No, but the person let's say they tried to take your license away and you weren't happy about that and you sued them, even though you really shouldn't drive. Mm-hmm. You may sue them, so they got to now deal with that. So but putting it in the doctors. Plus, some people don't have a permanent doctor. A lot of people just go to one of the urgent care things. They don't have permanent doctors.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot to it, but I will just, right now in Florida, it's a vision thing. So anyway.
Yeah. But you can, if you suspect that your loved one shouldn't drive, you can have them tested again.
Yeah.
So, and this was in Florida.
It's a voluntary thing. Well, thanks a lot, Donna. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
Yep.
Thanks, Donna.
Bye.
We've got another caller on the line, John in Jacksonville. Shifting gears here with a septic tank issue. John, you're on the Consumer Law Hour.
Yes. Hi. Pardon my voice. I'm getting a cold. But I just had to run across the room. But I bought a house about 3 years ago from Exit Realty. And the disclosure said there was no plumbing problems. And the day I moved in, I found receipts from the previous owner, plumber. I had about half the plumbers in Jacksonville in the last 3 years coming to my house. But ultimately, the septic tank, but only I had to empty it like every month. It got more and more closer together. It's when I first moved in, I emptied it. And when I started digging around it, the house was built in the 40s. Well, I can't get my wind. The house was built in the 40s, and the front of the septic tank has been gone probably since then. It's completely gone. The whole septic tank was just deteriorated. It's been leaking in the yard for years. And we've got roots and meth. And they disclosed that there was no problem. And I've got to be able to get some money. It cost me $9,000 to get a new system. I just got to finish.
Okay. All right. So you're saying that there's a warranty issue from was there a representation to you that there were no plumbing problems? Did you have a home inspection done, by the way?
Yes, I did. And I was looking it up, and it's pretty clear that they must have disclosed it, and there's no way they didn't know it. There's no way. This thing is not fun. I've got pictures of it. The guys that replaced it, it actually had clay pipes, those old clay pipes. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they expected that to work, but it was sold as under disclosure. There is no, there are no plumbing issues. So, that's where it's staying.
Well, you know what? Even though it's a used home, based on the fact that they made those representations to you, you may have a claim mm-hmm. against the former homeowner and Exit Realty. So, we're a personal injury firm, but I know someone who may be able to handle that for you. If you want to give your phone number to our producer, I can be in phone contact next week.
That would be great.
Yeah, have you paid the $9,000?
If they don't know it, they should know it. It's up to them. It's their responsibility. So thank you very much. I'll stay on hold.
Okay. Stay on hold.
Yeah, all right. I was going to ask him another question. That's okay.
All right, John, thanks for giving us a call today. Stay on hold. Producer Tom will take care of you in just a few moments. In the meantime, we've got to take a quick break, get updated news from Fox, local traffic and weather, and we'll be back with the second half of the Consumer Law Hour coming up in just a few moments. 855-765-1045. Lines are open on the Consumer Law Hour on News 104.5 WOKV. We are back on the Consumer Law Hour, 855-765-1045, the number to call. If you want to talk to our legal experts, Eddie Farah, Chuck Farah from the law firm of Farah and Farah, available to take your calls and your questions right now at 855-765-1045.
You know, Scott, we were talking to an attorney yesterday, a friend of ours, and, when you buy a used car, you see that sign. They have to put that sign in the window. You buy as is.
Right.
There's no warranties. You buy it as is.
It's a sad truth I am dealing with right now.
But let me tell you, that's not the end of the story. And I always thought, I know when you buy a new car, you got that lemon law to protect you because it's, never been titled. But even a used car that you buy as is, depending on how the sale came down, you would have a potential claim against the seller of the vehicle, the company, even the finance company.
And there may be a warranty there.
There may be a warranty because if they come out and they do a checklist, and I've seen them, one of my kids purchased a used car. We were there. They go, here's your checklist. We went through everything. A guy comes out of the office before we pick up the car, and he checks off tires, transmission, brakes, boom, 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 motor, all this stuff. That's a warranty.
Ooh,
even
tell me more.
Even though you're buying it as is, you have a potential depending on how the sale came down, depending on what they told you when you purchased the car, you would have a claim for breach of warranty. There are several avenues of relief. It's not just the people that sold it to you. It could be the finance people. It could also be the surety bond that's included in some of that. So anyone who has any questions about a used car they purchased and it's just not, so they're having problems with it, give us a call. Maybe we can find someone to help you for that.
Oh, I'm excited about the possibilities on that. I am actually used car shopping right now.
Well,
and,
I can tell you,
there's quite a bit of information that is hard to find.
Yes.
and a lot of questions that don't get answered when you're dealing with a used car purchase.
Yeah, but when they give you the checklist, you know, even though you're buying it as is, they come out, they have a guy comes out of the office and, oh, we went over all this. Here's your, you know, we looked at all these items and everything's looking good and you sign off on it and everything. That's a warranty.
Yeah.
That is a warranty.
Even on the price breakdown, sometimes you'll see a delivery charge on there for, you know, $700 or whatever.
Yeah, and the car's here in Jacksonville.
Yeah, and, right. Yeah, so it's like, well, you know, you got to look into that. Because
you delivered at ATG, brother. What's up with that?
Yeah, there could be a warranty embedded in that because they just can't charge you for nothing. I mean, they're doing something. They're probably examining the car, checking, inspecting it, and charging you for that inspection.
Well, it seems like it's giving a certain representation of the product, and if it doesn't live up to that, you know, are you bound by the terms of the representation?
Yeah, but a lot of people are just, they get discouraged because they see that sign in the window that you're buying it as is. Not necessarily so. So anyway,
we've got a question here about car wreck responsibility. Mike in Jacksonville, you're on the Consumer Law Hour with Farrah and Farrah.
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
Thanks, Mike.
My question is, I was in a wreck a few months ago, and the other person, we didn't get a police report, but the other person's insurance company eventually accepted liability for it. They spoke to the police officer that responded and all that. The problem I had is initially the person that was at fault lied to his insurance company, despite evidence I provided, pictures, the police officer's statement, all that. And it delayed for about 2 weeks them accepting liability, his insurance company. That cost me a lot of lost income. And while they've already paid out for my car and some of the other things, they said I had to go through my personal injury protection policy through my insurance company. When I contacted them, they said, you weren't hurt. That's their liability. Basically, I have loss of income because the other person, the at-fault driver, lied.
Right.
And my question is, who do I pursue to try and recoup that?
All right. How did his lie cause you to lose wages?
Because my vehicle was totaled, and I didn't have the resources to get another vehicle or even a rental vehicle until his insurance company accepted liability, which was delayed for 2 weeks because of his false information.
All right, so you couldn't get to work or you couldn't do your job or whatever for that period of time.
Exactly.
Okay, well, first of all, you could maybe sue for that. I mean, it's not a lot of money for 2 weeks of wages to file a lawsuit. But technically, if you were injured, your insurance company, your PIP, would pay you 60% of your gross lost wage.
If the injury prevented him from working.
From working.
But this is not an injury.
Yeah, what prevented you from working was not the injury. You're right, Chuck. Was the fact you didn't have a vehicle. Let me ask you this. Why could you not take Uber to work and then assess them that fee?
Well, because of the...
Or take a bus to work.
I'm sorry,
go ahead. I'm just saying, I'm playing the devil's advocate with you.
Oh, no, I understand. Because I don't have a traditional job, I have a rental property that I wasn't able to get to get ready to rent. The wreck happened right towards the end of the month. Mm-hmm. Because of the two-week delay, I basically lost the month of rental income.
Well, technically, they owe you the rental car, the insurance company. Once they settled with you on the total loss of your vehicle, did you get the sales tax also on top of the retail value? Okay. They also should have paid you the fair rental value for that 2 week period of time that you did not have a vehicle. So you should go back to them and get that money.
Yeah. But Eddie, what you hit on is a mitigation of damages. They should have, you know, he could have rented a car and then recovered the rental that he was out. But
unfortunately, I couldn't because I also couldn't go to even collect rent from some of my other rental properties. So, I mean, I literally, because of some other things, was flat broke.
Is the value of your car, does it exceed the policy limits on the property damage insurance? So everyone in Florida is required to carry... to carry $10,000 in property damage liability insurance to pay for it.
you know, the value is less than that.
Okay. Yeah, so there may be money back there that you can collect for
For what you've lost.
For what you've lost. So you'd still go against the at-fault party under the property damage liability coverage.
Okay. And that's what I thought. I just wanted, because it's not enough money to really get, you know, a lawyer. I guess it's a small claims type deal if it goes to that. But I just want to make sure it's headed in the right direction.
Yeah.
Yeah, you ought to get back in touch with the adjuster. Say, here's what happened. Y'all, for 2 weeks, y'all did nothing. I have proof that, you know, I didn't have a vehicle. They at least owe you the fair market value for the rental. If they don't make the wage loss, if they don't believe your wage loss argument, you know, whatever kind of car you had, if it's $50 a day rental times 2 weeks, that's $700. You should be able to recover that.
Okay, because they did get me a rental vehicle for about a week and a half after they accepted liability.
Right.
And then they canceled it once they determined my vehicle was total.
Yeah, once they gave you the check, it's over. But you should get it for that period of time where they were trying to figure it out.
Okay.
They should have accepted responsibility from day one.
Yeah. Once they accept the liability,
it's retroactive.
And they said they, if I would have gone on my own and gotten a rental car, they would have reimbursed me, but I wasn't in a position to do that.
Yeah, I think you're there. They owe you that, whatever that period of time, you did not have a vehicle.
Okay.
And you could probably make a claim for the lost wages also.
Okay, great. That answers my question.
Yeah, and then you may have to go to small claims court, and that's something you could do on your own. I'll tell you, if you file that small claims court, they will not pay their lawyer to defend that case. They will call you and resolve it.
That's what I figured. It just doesn't make sense for them financially to fight it.
But if you file, and plus you'll get the filing fee back. It's going to cost you a couple $100 to file it. But the judge will make them reimburse you that filing fee plus those damages. So really, I think, and the clerk of the court will help you prepare the documents, but you could sue that at-fault driver. Or what you could do, I mean, even I'm just trying to give you a little bit of legal advice here, is call the adjuster you were dealing with. Look, I have in my hand a complaint in small claims court. I'm claiming the rental car for the period of time I did not have a vehicle, which was whatever it is. You can call somebody and find out what it would have cost to rent that car for that period of time. And I have lost whatever it is in wages because I couldn't rent you a property. He may give you some pushback on that, but he'll, you know, say, listen, I would have made $500 from this rental, so you owe me whatever it is, $1,000, $1,500. I'm going to file this small claims action if you don't pay me. And he'll probably make an offer to you because he doesn't want to have to go back to his supervisor and say that Mike filed this lawsuit against us over $1,500 because they have to go to hire a lawyer.
Right.
That's how we handle it for you.
If it does get to the point where I file the small claims suit, is it filed against the insurance company or the at-fault driver?
It's an at-fault driver. It'd be against the driver, but the insurance company will step in to defend him. Once you serve the at-fault driver, he will then forward that over to the adjuster. Or you could send a copy of it to the adjuster himself. If he doesn't believe that, I would go to the clerk's office downtown, draw it up, write it up, send a copy to the adjuster. Say, I'm going to go file this if you don't pay me. I bet you'll pay you some money.
Great. Well, I really appreciate your help, and you all have a great holiday.
Thanks.
Good luck for the call, Mike.
Let us know how it turns out.
I will. Thank you.
Okay, good.
Good luck, brother. We've got Rick in Fort Caroline with a concern about a malfunctioning traffic signal. Rick, you're on the Consumer Law Hour.
Yes, thanks, gentlemen. Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I'll see you make this fast. Yesterday afternoon, I was heading north on Gervin Road, coming up on a fairly new intersection of Gervin and Joandy, and, stopped there for the red light. The light turned green, and then oncoming traffic guy turned left right in front of me, and I'm like, you know, jerk. And I kind of started going again, and then the lady behind him started going. And, you know, I just saw the look of, you know, shock and disgust in her eyes, and the same with me, probably. And, you know, she went through, and I proceeded on the road, and I'm like, I have one side of my brain telling me that it's impossible for a traffic light to give a green, for cross traffic. And then I'm getting down the road, and I'm like, before she got through, I looked up, my, you know, double-checked, my light's green. I turned around, spent about 20 minutes videoing the traffic signal before it happened again.
Mm-hmm.
And I got it on video that, you know, the light turns green, you know, with the other oncoming traffic. I don't know if you know anything about traffic signals. I always thought that was impossible.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, there may be an issue there.
All right, so here's the question. Here's the problem with that, Rick. Not a problem, but here's the issue that you got to deal with. God forbid if something were to happen, I guess they say, I want to sue the city because they weren't maintaining the traffic signal. In Florida, there's what they call sovereign immunity. You can only sue the government for operational type issues. For instance, operational is a JEA truck runs a red light and smacks you. That's operational.
Yeah.
The state and the city and the county have immunity for what they call planning decisions. Like, do we put a stoplight there? Okay. What you're talking about may be considered a planning decision, and they have no liability for that. So you're going to, I mean, it's not black and white.
But if there's an arrow, green arrow for a left turn, and a green bulb to go straight, that's probably a malfunction.
I know that, but they may consider that a planning thing. We just...
planning to cause an accident, maybe.
I've seen accidents on there, and, you know, if somebody said, hey, I had the green light, the other guy's like, I got the green arrow, they're going to say, no, the guy with the green arrow is right.
Have you tried? Yeah, exactly. They have the right. Have you reported to the city?
Yes.
Okay. Did they say there was an error, or that's the way they had
it? No, I mean, I waited around a little bit yesterday. I think I'm going to check in tomorrow, but I didn't know if, you know.
Yeah, we'll get in that on the other side of the break.
Yeah.
All
right, thanks.
I'll let you go, and I'll listen for it. Thank you.
All right, Rick, thanks for calling. Another quick break, and we will be back with our final segment of the Consumer Law Hour. 855-765-1045. Lines are open. We're ready for you. We're ready to help you. On News 104.5 WOKV. And we're back with our final segment of the Consumer Law Hour. 855-765-1045. The number to call to get you in touch with our legal experts, Chuck Farah, Eddie Farah from the law firm of Farah and Farah, our show sponsors. As we go to St. Augustine, Michael's on the line with some concerns about an auto accident. Michael, you're on the Consumer Law Hour.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I had a question. My child was involved in an automobile accident in another state. Our policy is here in Florida. She was found to be at fault, and it's been almost a year now. The other injured party has not settled with the insurance yet.
Okay.
I know they have 3 years in the particular state that they are where the accident happened. So I'm kind of on the other side of the, personal injury claim side where, you know, I'm waiting for the insurance company to hopefully settle at, you know, the liability limits of my policy. But I'm just wondering, you know, they came back and said, you know, there's a chance that it may exceed
the
limits. So
what you need to do to protect yourself is, so the car was in your name too, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so what you want to do, and we talked about this before, you really should have your car in your name and her car in her name alone. Because that way they cannot come after anything that you and your wife own or your assets.
Right.
Okay.
I understand that now.
So what you should do is you could get with a lawyer, you could write a letter. You should write a letter to your insurance company, say, look, you have a duty to defend me. It can be very simple, just like this. You have written me a letter saying that the person who's injured could come after me for more than what the policy is. I'm telling you right now to go ahead and you need to settle this case within the policy limits and get me out of this. So these insurance companies, they don't want to pay the money. So they could expose you to an excess verdict. So if you write the letter, you've told them to settle it because they've got to look after your interests. And if they don't, after you write the letter and then there's a lawsuit and the verdict is more than the policy, you have a claim against your own insurance company for not protecting you. That's how it needs to be handled.
I understand. Now, that would have to – now, if I were if a claim was filed against me, I would have to find a lawyer.
No, your insurance company will defend you. They'll defend you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they'll find a lawyer there to defend you. Yeah, that's what you got an insurance for. But you want it to get resolved within the policy limit. So your insurance company has a duty to protect you. Because if they tender the policy limit and the other side accepts it, the case is over. But obviously your insurance company doesn't want to pay. So they could be exposing you to an excess verdict. And the way to stop that is to tell them, look, you got to look after me. That's why I have the insurance. Go pay them the money within the policy limit and get me out of this.
Okay.
Me and my daughter.
Thank you very much.
You sure?
Well, I sure appreciate your help. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for calling in.
Michael, we appreciate the call. Guys, we've come to the end of another edition of Consumer Law Hour. The hour has flown by. As always, our legal experts, Chuck Farah, Eddie Farah from the law firm of Farah and Farah, our show sponsors. My name is Scott Young. Shout out to our producer, Tom, taking care of us today.
Have a nice Thanksgiving, everyone.
Have a great Thanksgiving. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a fresh new episode of the Consumer Law Hour. Best of next week. As always, the weekend experts' opinion shows continue on News 104.5 WOKV.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.